Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, when Will first asked me to lead the ceremony, I didn't have anything prepared, and Will just said, "Talk about what got you into Zen." And so I was thinking about that some more this time in choosing a text. And I think I mentioned that I was raised in an observant Christian family, but not necessarily devout. And also coming from a background of being in science and engineering and such was very much about being, I guess the word would be secular. So then coming into Zen, one of the first things that struck me that seemed to be strange was this idea of liturgy. Today we chanted the Diamond Heart Sutra, and I was always intrigued about why do we do this? It seems to be like it's more mumbo jumbo spells, maybe, I don't know, strange words that really don't mean anything, do they? So this was new to me, and my thinking about this has evolved. But one of the pieces that really brought it home to me was this reading that I'm going to do now, which is actually done by John Dino Lurie. He's from the Mountains and Rivers Monastery in New York. But it was a very good explanation, I thought, of why liturgy is helpful as part of our Zen practice. Ritualistic behavior is an integral part of life, of all life, not only the life of human beings, but every kind of life, from bees, wolves, cats, birds, insects, and worms, right down to bacteria. Ritual is simply an inherent aspect of social interaction. Part of the problem we have with liturgy is that in this country, it comes about because we like to consider ourselves as essentially secular culture, while in fact there is a theistic supposition underlying the way most of us understand how the universe works. This becomes obvious how difficult it is for most Americans to recognize sacred ritual or liturgy that does not address a divine being. Put most simply, the question we have to deal with in non-theistic Zen liturgy is, what is the ritual about if the Buddha is not a god? In Zen, the question of a divine being is not central, and instead, the emphasis is on the ground of being, the Buddha nature, which is not separate from the nature of the self. All of Zen's rites and rituals are constantly pointing to the same place, to the realization of no separation between the self and the 10,000 things. Zen liturgy is upaya, skillful means. Like Zazen and all the other areas of training, it functions as a way of uncovering the truth, which is the life of each of one of us. Zen study, face-to-face teaching, work practice, academic study, art practice, body practice, the precepts, all point to the same place, the nature of the self. Skillful means are necessary because each one of us, just as we are, is already perfect and complete. We lack nothing. What we seek is exactly where we stand. But knowing this doesn't do anything. It is not a matter of knowing. It has to be realized as the functioning of our lives. And for practice to function, for liturgy to function, it must first be wholeheartedly engaged. Practice is always with the whole body and mind. Just imitating the honchos, aping the form, monkey see, monkey do, is a dead end. It is like binding oneself without a rope. The first morning service at our monastery here each day is dedicated to Shakyamuni Buddha and expresses our identification with him. Shakyamuni Buddha is not dead. A hall full of Buddhas identifies with him. But what does Buddha mean? What does enlightenment mean? Is enlightenment something that you get or is given to you? Of course not. This is why we say that there are no Zen teachers and there is nothing to teach, pointing again to the fact that we already have what we seek. This first daily practice expresses that wisdom. It is an identification with what we already have, our Buddha nature, the intrinsic enlightenment of each one of us. The service is also an expression of gratitude for the teachings of the historic Buddha, for the fact that after he realized himself, You didn't just take off for some mountaintop retreat with the attitude, well, I got what I was seeking for the last 8 years, to hell with everybody else. Mm-hmm. Instead, you stayed in the world for 47 years, teaching the unteachable, so that this incredible Dharma could be transmitted mind to mind through successive generations from India to China to Japan and now to America. Expressing gratitude is transformative, just as transformative as expressing complaint. Imagine an experiment involving two people. One is asked to spend 10 minutes each morning and evening expressing gratitude. There's always something to be grateful for. While the other is asked to spend the same amount of time practicing complaining, and there is also always something to complain about. One of the subjects is saying things like, I hate my job. I can't stand this apartment. Why can't I make enough money? My spouse doesn't get along with me. That dog next door never stops barking, and I just can't stand this neighborhood. The other is saying things like, I'm really grateful for this opportunity to work. There are so many people these days who can't even find a job. And I'm so grateful for my health. What a gorgeous day. I really like this full breeze. So they do this experiment for a year. And guaranteed, at the end of that year, the person practicing complaining will have deeply reaffirmed all his negative stuff rather than letting it go. While the one practicing gratitude will be a very grateful person. The takeaway is that what you practice is what you are. Practice and the goal of practice are identical. Cause and effect are one reality. Expressing gratitude can indeed change our way of seeing ourselves and the world. Okay. Comments, questions?
I'm coming here and kind of falling directly into the ritualistic aspects of the practice, and at times feeling like I am kind of going through the motions, almost like I'm here, I'm doing it. It's in the right context, but sometimes I do feel a little bit like I'm not a phony, but like a bit of a posing a little bit. And I know, like what you just read says, you know, what you do is what you are. Mm-hmm. But that's been something that I kind of, you know, sometimes I'm, it's more present in my mind than other times.
Mm-hmm. I myself have had that same mm-hmm. feeling sometimes. Am I really here? Faking
since,
it a bit.
Since we weren't born into this culture,
right?
You know, we came to it at a later time, mm-hmm. and I guess maybe that's our own insecurity or what we kind of the kind of worldview that we are kind of programmed with. Being non-native Buddhists,
mm-hmm. you know? Could well be, yeah. Yes. Good point.
Okay, so thanks for leading today. I'm glad that I remembered this morning to come to the session. And interesting topic, liturgy. You know, I guess just the whole formality that comes to mind with liturgy is kind of off-putting for me. It's I want to non-conform in my conformity. What you were saying about you know, gratitude, that is strikes home how important it is to be grateful. And if I'm grateful, I will do things that express that gratitude. And I guess the being a bodhisattva, which to me is best expressed by, you know, the question, how can I help? And trying to do something to add something positive to whatever situation I'm in without having someone else to do something for or to help. I find it hard, because if it's just for me, I'm not quite as motivated. I guess that's a part of my addictive mindset, you know, doing things that are kind of self-effacing.
Having said that, Ross, even when we're on our own, and it's like when we're sitting, we're not really sitting alone. We're sitting with all of the Buddha, bodhisattvas and Buddhas that have ever been and ever will be. We're still a part of everything, even when we're alone. So it is any action that you take that you decide is the right thing to do will be shared, essentially.
Yes, I agree. I accept that. Although I don't always recognize that, or I'm not always conscious of that. I tend to more to isolate and to go into my own head, my own thinking, and to consciously separate myself from people and the world around me. That's like my default. So that's why I have to take action. That's the only thing that kind of changes my perspective. I cannot think my way into a different way of feeling, but I can act my way into a different way of feeling. And that's why it helps me so much to be a part of a Sangha, because I find it's transformative in that way. That automatically breaks my isolation and brings out the best of me, the bodhisattva in me, for me. And to the extent that that's liturgy, I can relate to it. It's really necessary for me, because I can't do it by myself.
It is that powerful thing of having a sangha, isn't it? That connection that we have, the shared experience, is really a reflection of that wider participation. We can think of sangha in more than one instance, in this case, more than one interpretation. You say, Will, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. Thank you. First of all, I just want to express my gratitude that you're there and that you're all there together. And I'm here with you, because we really are always together. And liturgy is actually, in Zen, has nothing to do with a god or some other. It is always pointing at real nature, your original nature, your Buddha nature. Liturgy is upaya, expedient means, get to know yourself. So it's not about celebrating some other. It is celebrating everything, all of it, from right where you are. Expedient means is practice, is exercise. It's thing to keep you from getting caught up in yourself. Thank you for that. That was a really wonderful reading, and I appreciated it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Anything more? Well, then, if I can say one thing about gratitude, it's like just the opportunity to do this is such a, it's an experience. And I recommend it for everybody here. Should at some point sit here and do it. It really is. It's another, it adds to it, yes. Thank you, everyone. I guess we'll call it quits for now, and we'll do it again shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Will.